Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. And that wonderful song is by a group called Love Shadow, and it's called There's a Better Way. So Google it and check it out. According to a study conducted in late April by the U.S. Department of Education and the National Institute of Literacy, 32 million adults in the U.S. cannot read. That's 14% of the population. 21% of adults in the U.S. read below a fifth grade level, and 19% of high school graduates cannot read at all. Illiteracy threatens over 785 million adults worldwide, translating into one in every five people on the planet with either no or just basic reading skills. 85% of all juveniles who interface with the juvenile court system are functionally illiterate, and over 70% of inmates in America's prisons cannot read above a fourth grade level. These statistics are surprising and alarming. Assuming that most people attend school, at least in modern cultures, how could this be happening? The answer is that many of these people have learning disabilities that prevent them from grasping the learning style that is taught across the board to most every student. Most people with learning abilities are just as smart as everyone else, sometimes smarter. They just need to be taught in ways that are tailored to their unique learning styles. If they are fortunate enough to have that opportunity, they will excel in life. But many learning disabilities are ignored or unaddressed, leaving the person to face a literate world as an illiterate. Today, I am fortunate to have two guest experts on the subject of literacy, Archie Willard and Colleen Wiemerschlag. Sorry, Colleen, that's a hard name. Archie is what he refers to as a new reader. He was functionally illiterate until the age of 54, leading what appeared to be a normal life, but keeping a terrible secret when a life crisis forced him to have to face the problem. Once Archie was diagnosed with dyslexia, his world began to open up for him. He began sharing his message of literacy with everyone he encountered, even sharing the stage with Barbara Bush. Archie Willard continues to work with literacy issues in medicine and consumerism nationwide. He co-creates videos, documentaries, and other media, and speaks on behalf of literacy to people worldwide. Colleen Wiemerschlag is a former teacher of every grade level, including college, a counselor, and a writer. She is fully literate, in fact, so exceptionally so, that her friend Archie Willard asked her to write his book for him. Together, they co-wrote Archie's book, Last Reader Standing, which tells the story of Archie's inspiring journey. So now let me introduce you to this dynamic duo. Good morning, Archie, and good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Randy.
Hi, thank you so much for being my guest today. Archie, what compelled you to want to write this book?
Well, I have been involved with literacy for over 30 years now, and through the years, I have had a lot of experiences, I guess I felt compelled to share my experiences, and hopefully I can give someone else some hope and to go forward in life.
You know, I read your book, and you talk about, you know, your childhood experience and what it felt like to be a child in a classroom where you were considered a dummy. Can you talk about that?
Well, goes back in the 30s, and there wasn't even a word called dyslexia back then. It was just, you were either lazy or stupid back then if you couldn't read. And of course, I'd rather have people think I was lazy than stupid, so I guess I kind of did things that maybe look lazy it's hard to, you know, when I was in school, I was moved to the back of the class because I couldn't read and wasn't called on. And after so long, when I was in first grade, that I realized that if I can't read, I can't be a doctor, or I can't be a lawyer or a teacher. And I hated school. Like, I just couldn't hardly wait till I was done with.
And how did your parents recognize that, or didn't they recognize it?
Well, my mother, as I look back now, she was dyslexic, and she just didn't know how to help me. And my father, this goes back in the Depression time, and my father worked 7 days a week, and he came home and he was tired, they were very kind to me. They didn't get angry at me because I wasn't learning, but all they did is say, just do the best you can, and they were, you know, satisfied with that.
Okay. It must have been a really tough time for you. Childhood really impacts our adulthood tremendously. I mean, these experiences are things we carry with us. Colleen, how did you meet Archie?
We both had retirement lifestyle in Arizona in the winter. And so we probably met about 7 years ago. We were both attending a yoga class, and we walked home together and kind of struck up a friendship. And Archie knew that I wrote a column for a newspaper, a family column, and then proceeded to invite me to want to write his book. And I was reluctant since I'd never done somebody else's writing. But as I soon learned, Archie's a very determined person who can make things happen. And so we moved ahead.
So what was that experience like, writing the story for someone else?
I guess I felt privileged to be invited into such a private part of Archie's world, and that he trusts me enough to share all that with me so we could put it on paper. And I like to write, and I'm a good writer, but to put somebody else's words on paper is a whole different thing, because you want it to sound like them. And that was my challenge, to find a way to do that, to make the book sound to be Archie's story. And it was both joyful and painful, because Archie's story is both and painful. So it was a 3-year process to get it all together and published.
Okay. I can definitely appreciate your experience, because I write books too. And I write in my voice, so I can imagine what it would, how hard it would be to write in someone else's voice. Archie, you, at what point did you really come to this crisis where you knew you just couldn't go on with your life the way it was?
Well, I worked in a meatpacking plant, and I'd worked there for 31 years, and the plant was closing. They were there, so I needed a new job, and so I had to do something. And of course, my wife read an article in a newspaper about the man who had dyslexia, and so she thought that sounded like me, and so she got some books and to make a long story short, I was tested at the University of Iowa Medical School and found to be dyslexic and very dyslexic and above average intelligence. And then she read another article about a reading program at Iowa Central Community College. And so I enrolled. And that was a hard process to go there because I thought it was deja vu all over again, and my wife and daughter my daughter was a senior in high school at the time, and they pretty much had to shove me in the car to get me going, but I finally went there, and it was a good experience, and people treated me well, and they helped me get a new job. And they prepared me for it, and they taught me how to function on it. And it was a wonderful experience. And I was asked if I would go talk to some schools where kids had learning disabilities. I didn't really want to, but I did, and it just grew from there. And the experiences kept going, and the opportunities just kept going from there. And that's how I got here today.
Okay. To my listeners, Archie and Colleen will take your calls if you have any. So the number to call in is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. Call in, and they will be happy to take your calls. Archie, your story is, I mean, it's very brave to be able to pick up and change your life in your 50s. You did some amazing things since then. What was it like being with Barbara Bush and sharing the stage about literacy with her?
Well, in Iowa we have 11 or 12 community colleges, and this one community, North Iowa Community College, was having a fundraiser to raise some money for literacy, and Barbara Bush was going to be there to speak, and she said that she would like to have a student be on the stage with her and maybe talk, and they didn't have, you know, there's going to be 2,000 people in this audience, and someone who just learned to read but just didn't have the confidence to get up there, So the leader of the program had heard about me giving speeches around the state, and she asked me if I would do it. I said I would, and when I got there, I thought, well, I'm way over my head, but I guess the spirit must give me the confidence, and it worked real fine, and it was a wonderful experience.
I'll bet it was. Wow. That is really something for your resume. But actually, you built your resume tremendously even after that. Colleen, you've been an educator for most of your life. How do parents, you know, how do they determine that they have a child with dyslexia, and then what do they do?
When I first started teaching, I was a first grade teacher, and you get to see the beginnings of how that child engages with reading. And you also get to see the painful journey of the parents and children who find that their child has some struggle with reading. And I was always so conscious of that, regardless of what grade level I taught after that. There is federal legislation that requires each state to provide testing and services for children who are diagnosed with a learning disability or dyslexia, any of those areas. But each state kind of interprets it their own way, and there's money available for each state to provide services. But unless there's a passionate leader of that program, those services might not be as good or as strong or as available as needed. And so my advice to parents would be, you have a right to ask for your child to be assessed. Don't give up on that. Continue to push for it until you get your child assessed. And if you have the resources, you can also privately be assessed in private settings or medical settings. And then once the assessment has been done, then you know what kind of resources your child needs. You have to be an advocate for that child until they can learn to advocate for themselves.
Okay, great advice. Can you tell us what a dyslexic person experiences? What's different about how they see things than how we see things?
Archie, why don't you answer that one?
Okay, great. Archie.
Well, before I went to school, I had two older sisters and a dog and a backyard full of friends. And I seemed to be very normal, little four-year-old and five-year-old. But when I went to school, I could say the alphabet in order and knew all the letters. But when we had our first reading lesson, I could not blend. There would be a group of letters in front of me, and I could not blend it and make it sound as a word. I just couldn't blend those sounds together. And seemed like everybody else could do it, and it really frustrated me. And I really, really tried. And one day I was moved to the back of the room and wasn't called on. And you almost feel like you're alone in this world. And I sat there, and it seemed like I was all by myself, but I was in a room full of people. People just look at you differently, I had problems on the playground, and I went around, and I didn't go to the playground. I went to the front of the building, and you're always alone, and it hurts, and you're always on guard and making excuses, and a lot of times people, they're teasing you, and you're in the principal's office for being in trouble all the time, and it's not a very good way to grow up.
Oh, childhood is hard enough without having that, that kind of disability. Colleen, do most teachers recognize this? Or is it often just pushed through? These kids are pushed through.
In Archie's time of being a high school, grade school, middle school, high school, in all fairness to his educators, there wasn't much known about learning disabilities. Unfortunately, in my training and in my time of being in education, I knew what a learning disability was. My training included it, and I was trained in Minnesota, and I know that Minnesota and Iowa have strong educational training programs that include learning disabilities. But I can't speak for all states. I don't know how strong that training is. So for me, being in a classroom, I might not be able to assess what the learning disability was, but I understood that the child had challenges, and then I could make referrals to have the child tested to see what that child needed to be more successful. And so that was my experience as an educator. All the people that I worked with in the various settings that I was in all had training that allowed them to understand that there were some needs that weren't being met and we needed other resources and opportunities.
Right, and hopefully that's a more widespread thing that educators are taught in school so that they can look out for. But, you know, I would imagine that some parents just don't want to hear it. Did you ever have that experience where you said, you know, your child is showing signs, but they say, no, nothing's wrong with my child?
Yes, and I would say that when you initially see that, it's fear because mm-hmm. they're afraid for their child and they don't know how they're going to be helped. Most of the time, I saw parents who were actually asking for help because they didn't know what to do. And,
perfect.
Of course, there's a degree of sadness connected to that because no one wants their child to struggle or to be different. Typically, you know, in Archie's case, his dyslexia is very severe, probably the most I've ever seen in my career. But he has such courage that he's worked through that. You know, he'll never mm-hmm. be as literate as me, for example, but he doesn't ever let that stop him. And so, you know, I guess a degree of courage and a degree of self-confidence is what's needed to help children be successful.
Right, so that's all part of the program of helping them.
Right.
It's building their self-esteem, not only teaching them to read, but building their self-esteem. So, Archie, you had to work twice as hard, you know, as everybody else once you really figured out what was wrong. And then you end up running for city council. How did that happen? I mean, talk about brave. Where did that come from?
I really don't know. I remember... I had a friend, a real good friend, and we were having some problems in our neighborhood. Some repair work needed, and so he said, "Let's go to the city council meeting." And so we went to the city council meeting, and we expressed our concerns. And on the way home, I said, "You know, that wasn't that hard to do." I said, "You know," I said, "What is?" My friend, why don't you run for mayor? And he says, I will if you run for city council. And I thought about it for a while. I said, well, why not? So we both did, and we both got elected. I was a good listener. I listened to what was going on, and I could talk about it. I could, you know, express my opinions of what was going on, and it was later on, it was a few years later, there was a piece in the newspaper about my learning disability and some of the things I've done, and this one doctor, he was a veterinarian, and he says, you aren't dyslexic, you knew what was going on, and he said, you're always talking, but no. I says, no, I really couldn't read, all these papers in front of me, I just looked at them and laid them down.
Wow.
But I got by.
Yeah, it's just so amazing. It must be such a freeing feeling to go from being so covert about this issue to really being so outspoken about it. And in your book, you talk about how you and you have a daughter, and you and your wife and your daughter never really said what was wrong with you. But they kind of took over and you know, did your writing for you, filled out your paperwork for you. It was never really said. So it must feel really good now to have this out in the open, does it?
Oh, yes, very definitely. And through the years, in Iowa, we've had what we call a New Readers Conference. And the first time that we ever got together, these people come from these programs all over the state, and it was amazing when they met each other. They thought they were alone in this world. They were the only one that liked this, because we and to meet all these other people was the same, and all of a sudden they start talking, and just like they knew each other all their life. And it was such warm, great feeling to know you weren't alone.
It's a family. It becomes a family that you all relate
right.
to. You said that one of your favorite places to speak is at the graduation ceremonies in prison. Why do you like to do that?
It seems like, these guys have been through so much in their life, and when they get their GED, they light up so much, and then when they hear someone else who struggles with reading, they just want to, they want to talk to you, they want to express themselves to you, and it's just such a wonderful feeling to see them light up. And I want to say that this one prisoner who was going to be released 3 days before the graduation ceremony, and he asked if he could stay in the prison for 3 more days because he wanted to stay for part of the graduation ceremony. So, I mean, it means a lot to me.
Yeah, you don't often hear of prisoners wanting to stay extra days.
No.
But yeah, I mean, like I said in the beginning of the show, it's statistics show that over 70% of inmates in America's prisons cannot read above the fourth grade level. And I guess that accounts for a lot of the crime and a lot of the reason why they're there, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Either one of you can answer this. How can the government handle this differently?
Well, I'm going to start with something, and then Archie, you can fill in here. There was a time when there was an agency at the federal level that just dealt with literacy, and Archie was very involved in that, and he can express that. And that agency is now just a chunk of the whole Department of Education. And so there's less focus on it. And I think because we have so many other national concerns, economics, disasters, threats of terrorism, I think that literacy sort of has taken a back seat. It's not prime. I don't think people realize, like, all your statistics are so accurate. I don't think people realize how significant our illiteracy still is. So, Archie, maybe you want to address the federal programming that you worked with.
Well, I was involved with the National Institute for Literacy. My daughter found out that there's some fellowships, and she encouraged me to apply for one, and I did, and I spent a year working in Washington, D.C. with the National Institute for Literacy. And they, at that time, they dealt with strictly adults and tried to bring awareness and so many things for adults. And it was a home for adults to come together and to cut the budget by they just wanted into the Department of Education, and it's just it's just a name in the Department of Education now. It's just not reaching out to as many people as it did before. And while I was there, we were able to start a national group of adults with literacy problems, and it was called Value. And it was run by adults who had been through reading programs, and it developed a lot of leadership around the country. The organization is struggling to get by. Yet today is still going, but there's so many things that that are happening that literacy is takes second place in our society.
Are they? Do they do fundraisers?
The
cause? No, that's a shame. You have one daughter, Archie, but isn't, you know, and I don't know if she, you know, has dyslexia as well as you do, or if she has children and they've shown it, but isn't it generally genetic?
Yes, it runs in families. Well, like I said, my mother had it, and my grandfather had it. My daughter, she doesn't have it, or her children doesn't have it, but probably in another generation, it will probably show up again.
Hmm. Okay. So right. So we need to get this world ready for these kids that are coming through, so that they can be really successful in life. There's an inner voice that you talk about that guides your life. What is that inner voice?
Well, it's always been there for me. It steered me in my life. When I went to go to the literacy program for the first time, I know when I got to the building I was supposed to be there, I drove right by and I couldn't stop. I don't need any reading help. I think I'll go home and listen to voices. Oh, yes, you do. And then it spoke to me again and said, if you don't go now, you never will go. And it spoke to me all the way, and it has taken me to be involved in literacy. And I don't know if other people have this, but it certainly is. Certainly has taken me, and I wouldn't be there without it.
Well, we all have an inner voice. It's just not all of us listen to it. but we do have
right.
an inner, you know, all have inner guidance. Right, Colleen? Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So, Archie, according to your book, you are 82 beautiful years old. What does life look like now that's different than when you were just beginning to read at 54?
Oh, well, I mean, I know a lot about dyslexia. I've gone to a lot of dyslexic conferences, national conferences, just being labeled dyslexic, it was a reason, but now I understand dyslexia, and I've talked to a lot of people, and I have grown, and it's been a wonderful experience just to encourage other people, and when you see somebody else grow, you feel so great, and it really is a like the joy of living life all over again.
Isn't that wonderful? You've had, you know, all these wonderful years being a new reader. That's so wonderful. Colleen, can dyslexia be diagnosed before grade school? Are there signs?
Yeah.
So what would parents look for?
Well, typically, you might notice that a child is developing an interest in reading by about 3, 4. There's an interest in being read to, and maybe even liking the parent to point to the words in a book as they read. And the child might begin to repeat those words, maybe memorize them so that they can share the book back with their parent. But with a dyslexic child, they probably wouldn't have the interest in following the words in the book. That might be one signal. I think it's really difficult to determine that it's dyslexia or what kind of a learning disability it is until they actually get to be 5 or 6. And a lot of school districts, states, do pre-assessments, usually of 4-year-olds, before they start school. If there are things that are visible as those pre-assessments are done, then some early childhood preparation can be done to help strengthen the weaknesses and strengthen the strengths. And so if your school district doesn't do that, again, then that's when you would have to try to seek some private resource that might help or go online and look for resources for parents that might be helpful to you.
Okay, that's good advice. I mean, that's something, you know, all parents should look out for. I mean, I know, you know, with my children, I watched everything about them, you know, just to make sure that, you know, they were growing and in every way, you know, I watched everything. But I'm sorry.
Well, I was thinking about when Archie and I spoke at an elementary school in Arizona this last winter, and it was it mostly fourth and fifth graders? Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. And I was so touched by this little girl with a group of kids that came up to Archie afterwards. But this one little girl was so touched by Archie's story that she came up and hugged him and asked him if she could have a book. And Archie and I talked about it afterwards. You know, was it she herself who is experiencing that? We don't know these children. Or was there somebody in her life that was experiencing it and she was aware of it? So just a beautiful moment. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like a beautiful moment. I'm sure there's been, you know, there's been many beautiful moments along the way. But, you know, when children express themselves that way, it is so incredibly touching. We're about 35 minutes into the hour, and so I want to give you an opportunity to talk about something, you know, anything that maybe we haven't covered. Is there anything either one of you would like to mention?
Go ahead, Coley.
I really don't have anything, Archie, unless you do.
How can people contact both of you?
Well, we have a website for the book, and it's www.thelastreaderstanding.com. On that website, you can learn about each of us as well as the location of our publisher, Betty Young's books.
Do you take emails?
My email is on there, and our phone numbers are on there.
Perfect.
And the book can be purchased in bookstores. It can be purchased at Barnes & Noble, on Amazon, and it's available in audio as well for people who might not read as well as they can listen. I guess it's available in a lot of electronic formats, so you can also download.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. The two of you obviously were fated to meet. Why do you think so? I mean, now I'm asking you a question. I'm really asking you to dig deep. Why do you think you were fated to meet? What is it that you brought to each other?
You want to take that, Archie?
I missed the last part of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, and I don't mean to stump you. I just was really curious to know, you know, if you really thought about why, I mean, do you think this was just the perfect match, the teacher writer with illiterate new reader? It just sounds like it was just so fated to be. I mean, do you feel that way?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Archie and I have talked about that often, that it couldn't have been a better fit,
right?
You know, in the sense that I also taught learning disabilities at one time, and so I really understood a lot of what was going on with Archie. But I have to say, in spite of the fact that I understood the academic areas of dyslexia, I don't think I really understood it until Archie and I wrote this book.
Okay. I mean, you know, people talk about dyslexia as seeing things backwards, but Archie, you describe it more as not even being able to put the sounds together. So I guess there's a range?
I've been to a lot of conferences and heard some people speak, and they have such a vocabulary, I don't understand half the things they're saying, but I have learned a lot, and there's... dyslexia, there's like four major types of dyslexia. You're going to have one type, or you're going to have two or three or all of them. And that's, of course, that's you really got a problem if you got all four of them. But yeah, most people think that dyslexia is just reverse letters. And I do a little bit, but I don't do enough that really makes that much of a difference. But I have a trouble blending sounds. And according to some of the experts, that's most dyslexics have that problem. Now there's others can read a blackboard, and they can read what they can read to what's on the blackboard, but they can't they don't understand it, or they can't remember it. And then there's another type is where you're clumsy with your hands, and that's another problem I have. If you ask me to thread the needle, it probably take me a half a day to get it done. I'm just really clumsy with my hands. My large muscle groups are fine. When I was in school, I played basketball, and I could shoot from way out, and I was as good as anybody. So that I wasn't clumsy in that way, but all dyslexics aren't alike. There's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you just got to figure out what kind of a learning style you need. If it's hands-on or what you see or what you hear, and it's got to be developed through the years. And if you work on it, why you can get better. And there's been a lot of people who left a lot of things in this world, like Thomas Edison and General Patton. These people are all dyslexic, and the world would be different without them.
That's right. Well, you're both doing fabulous work, because our future depends on our children, you know? So this is very important. We're really coming down to the end, so I'm unfortunately going to have to say goodbye and close the show. But I want to thank both of you for coming on and sharing, you know, your point of view with this, and helping others to recognize this and to, you know how to work through it. So thank you both so much, Archie and Colleen, for coming on.
Well, thank you for having us, Randy.
Yeah, it's really been my pleasure. So anyway, the book is called Last Reader Standing, The Story of a Man Who Learned to Read at 54. And for my listeners, pick it up. It's amazing. It's amazing what this man has accomplished. So anyway, goodbye. I have to say goodbye. But have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye. Thank you. I will. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. loveyourlife@randigfine.com. And please stop by and visit my website, randygfine.com, also randigfine.com, and sign the guest book. Leave me comments about my shows. And I have hundreds of articles there for you to read so that you can, spiritual growth articles, personal growth, metaphysical, meditation, letting go of pain, parenting. I mean, pretty much everything, and a lot of quotes, everything that you can imagine. So stop by my website and look through it. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. So I want to say thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine. Signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be